There we are. There we go. So I'm going to put. Hello and welcome to the Car Sim and Race Driver Show with me, Hugh Hattrick, and my very special guest, Kenny McLean.
Hello.
A star from Duns. I'll be saying, we're talking you up here, but Kenny McLean, as you'll see in a few minutes, is one of the main creators of all the exhibits that were put into the Jim Clark Motorsport Museum.
That's right,
I'm sure you'll correct me if I get it wrong. Just let me know. And which of course has gone on to be a huge success for Duns, exceeded all the targets that you had for people coming, and has really put motorsport back on the map for the Scottish borders, and really seen a lot of people come into Duns.
It's been, you know, the biggest thing in decades in this area for, you know, for the motorsport scene in terms of heritage and bringing people into the area. Connected with the rally coming back, actually, you know, it's been a great year for 2019 was a great year for the two things happening. And as you say, so we've had a trophy room in the town for 50 years, and the decision was made to rebuild it as the Motorsport Museum. We opened in July, and, you know, those 5 months up until we closed it in November, there was 12,500 people came through.
That's pretty good.
And, you know, to give you some context on that, the old room in a whole year would get 3,000, maybe 4,000.
Yeah,
so we did three times that in half a year, which just shows you the interest there's been. You know, it's the Jim Clark name is still an absolute icon internationally, not even just within Britain. So lots of visitors coming to see it for the first time. Lots of people coming back who came to the old room and wanted to revisit. So in between those two things, it's been a real addition to just to the local visitors. So it's been fantastic. And we had days when we had 100, 150 people through, which is absolutely
really
brilliant.
So how did you find yourself in a position to, you know, play such a part in the museum?
Well, it's just one of these things of fate, really, I suppose. I've worked for the museum service in the borders for 4 or 5 years now, doing work originally just a post for the Berwickshire area, so Coldstream Museum, work with Eyemouth, the library, and so on. And 2 years ago or so, the post came up learning and engagement officer, which is a rather wide-ranging title, but basically anything to do with kind of supporting the experience and visitors to the new museum. So I applied for that. I was lucky enough to get the job. And so I do that 2.5 days a week now in my original job for the rest, basically. So it's been a kind of year build up to preparing all the content for the exhibition, thinking about the layout, you know, getting the objects we're going to put on display and all those kind of things. And then obviously the setup, which was a very intense process. Builders finished and deadlines approached and so on. And then over the last 6 months has been the actual fruition of it and seeing it open. And it's been great. I mean, I'm from Dundas, born and bred, so to have been able to be involved in building something like that, it's been a fantastic thing, you know, for me personally. Totally aside from, you know, obviously working for the service, it's not that often that something like that gets built in Berwickshire.
No, I think it's a very good museum, and to anyone who's listening here or who's watching and who hasn't been to the Jim Clark Motorsport Museum, it really is worth a trip up to see it, because it's got really all the memorabilia about Jim Clark. And one of my questions is going to be, obviously you had a chance to see all the kind of trophies and things that hadn't been on display for many, many years, and choosing what was going to be the right thing for the museum must have been quite a challenge. But you must have also come over some quite interesting and little surprises or hidden gems that
I mean, that was one of the things, is that because the old place was just a trophy room, it was most of his trophies in the collection, not all of them, were on display, and there's the odd model card and things, you know, the odd race program. But it really was just a trophy room, you know, it did what it said in the Jim Clark room. And so the new place, because it has a whole section of the museum devoted to his story, you know, and it's a case of, you know, telling his story through obviously photographs and information panels and film and so on, but also through objects. And as you say, it was a case of going through the collection and also seeing what we could acquire from other people on loan or even on eBay, believe it or not. There's a fantastic Lion comic with Jim Clark on the cover, and the story was Indianapolis success. It was just obtained online. You know, we didn't have a copy in the collection, but spotted it, and £5, £10, whatever it was, and it's on display now. You know, so it shows you that it was about building it up, mainly from the collection, but also whatever we could acquire. So.
And I hear that people do send they send things into the museum as well. Interesting things sent
every month. There's probably something interesting comes in. Yeah, people send photographs in the main, but maybe race programs they've had, or, you know, people. they were at a dinner sometime that Jim Clark was there and autographed their menu or that sort of thing. So, and occasionally more unusual item as well, you know, maybe get a book that someone owned that Jim Clark signed or that kind of stuff. And the museum is always interested in these things. We have a temporary exhibition gallery in the museum, and each year a different theme will be taken for a new exhibition. Yeah. So there'll always be the possibility in future to put new things on display. And also use them in terms of, you know, part of my job now becomes about school outreach and getting schools and educational groups in to visit, and we can use objects for those activities as well. You know, when we go to talks and shows and conferences and events and put little displays on too. So the more the merrier, really. If people have something that they're interested in and think might be of use, get in touch at least. And, you know, we always say don't assume that we've already got it. You know, we can tell you.
So if you've got a pair of Jim Clark socks, you can send them in.
There's a whole variety of things. I mean, you know, if someone's got you know, particularly stuff that's personal to Jim, obviously. But even things like there was a record made, The Ballad of Jim Clark,
really?
Which we don't have a copy of. And I believe one sold at an auction or something a while ago, but we've not come across one yet. So
that would be quite good. It's playing in the background.
It's always about building up that kind of picture of his life, really, because so much of it, you know, he was a media, although he was a shy and reserved man, he didn't really enjoy the limelight. He was a media star of his age, and so he was covered in, you know, all these magazines, and there was so many things, you know, made that was about him, and it's just about getting a kind of a cross section of those just to show people what he was about. One of my favourite bits in the museum, although it's not a prominent feature, is in the garage area where the cars are on display. The back wall of it, we just have a whole series of advertising posters, you know, things that Jim was on the cover of or was endorsed by, or, you know, so it's everything from Skeletrix to spark plugs to, you know, even something when he was made Freeman of Duns. People love taking the photograph of the big Flying Scotsman Freeman of Duns sign. So, the memorabilia is just one of those aspects that adds to the museum experience.
Do you have a favourite bit in the museum or something that you think that really kind of stands out for you?
Personally, the trophy room, partly because that was one of the bits I was took the lead on, but the trophy room, visually when you walk into it, it's just such an impressive space. You know, it's three sides of this glass and metal, basically. You know, most of the trophies are silver or so on. And in connection with that, really, is the fact that you can visually see his story from his earliest races in the mid-50s, early, when the trophies are just like egg cups. You know, there's a lot of things you got, Charter Hall, Winfield, Stubbs Camp, whatever it might be. And you can just follow, you know, standing there looking, you can see as his career, because the trophies are chronological, I should say. And you can see from the very first trophies and how they get bigger and more impressive, and the German Grand Prix and, you know, Indianapolis and Le Mans, all these kind of things. So the trophy room is fantastic because, you know, those are things that he won for what he was famous for. You know, the sections about his life in the farm and his personality away from the track and so on are very, very interesting parts of the museum too. But the reason we all know who Jim Clark is because he was champion of the world. He was the greatest racing driver there's been. And the trophy room area really brings that home. And what we've done with it to bring it into the 21st century is that now, you know, there's the iPads on each side. You move the iPad along the rail, it knows where you are, follows where you go. Wherever you stop the iPad, it tells you about the trophies in that bay. And you can watch footage from the race, photographs, learn about the car and the track. So at your fingertips is anything you want to know about any of those trophies.
That's a fair bit of technology, actually, isn't it?
It is, and it's worked. I must say, it's worked very well. You always have a little fear with these things that they'll, you know, sound good on paper but not work. But no, all the interactives have been superb and obviously quite intensively used. Like 12,000 people plus through. Just keep them oiled so they keep running along, and then the software gets updated now and again, and they've all been very, very useful so far. So it was a heck of a work to get it all done, though. There's 210 screens of content, I think, between all the trophies and the tracks and the cars and so on.
Because you've even got an old telephone, haven't you? You've got an old telephone that you can pick up and you can hear.
That's right.
It's interviews
with mechanics and so on. It's in the teamwork section. It baffles a lot of kids. They've never used a dial telephone.
That's it. But they're wonderful.
You see them looking at it, and they're just used to, well, not even modern mobiles, you know, touchscreen mobiles nowadays. You can see them looking at mum and dad or granny and grandpa and saying, how do I watch them? They think they push them and only have to turn it. So, it's great. People love using it. One of the good things for kids is that, you know, it's not just what we call static content. Like, say, there's film, there's
it's interactive, touch screens. They've even got a Lego race car thing.
And, yes, sort of, and it's not all just kind of modern technology. There's really hands-on stuff. There's a Lego build station. They can build a car, try and race it downhill. And in the spring, we'll have a kids' trail launching. There'll be a kind of treasure hunt for them in the museum going.
All right.
Based on the model cars.
Yeah.
Most of the trophies that are prominent, we have a little model car of the actual car it was won in.
Yeah.
So they'll go around looking for toy cars, but that will, when they find one, it'll tell them why the trophy or the object beside that car was important in Jim's place.
Yeah. I mean, also, as we are the Car Sim and Race Driver Show, it wouldn't be right to mention the simulators. You've got a phenomenal simulator in the museum as well. Tell us a bit about that.
It's been, one of the kind of, you know, big key selling points of the new place was having the space to do different things.
Yeah.
And so in the main atrium, there is a reproduction Lotus 49 bodywork simulator with virtual reality helmet, or you can race it using the widescreen TV if you prefer.
Yeah.
And you know, that has been particularly great, again, for younger people. When they have school classes in, school visits, or girl guides, or a whole load of things, they have a whale of a time with it. But during normal opening hours, it's available to anyone. There's a supplementary charge for it, but you get a quarter of an hour or so on the car, see what time you can set, challenge the family, whatever it might be. So, and it's been used, I forget the figure, but it's 400 or 500 times
so good, far.
So it's most days it's used. A good maybe half of the day, you know, if you had all the time together. So it's, again, a really key part of people who visit as well if they want to use it. So.
Yeah. And this is, I mean, I've had personal experience of doing it. I did a 1:09. Well, that was my best time that I did. So it wasn't too bad. And, of course, you've had competitions. You had one earlier on in January, on the 4th and the 5th of January, and that was well attended and people had a great time.
Yeah, we had about 50, 60 people through, mainly families, which was good. It was part of how we did it. It was to fall between New Year and the schools going back. And we had a prize for each day, whoever had the quickest time, who could be fastest around the Silverstone circuit that it's run on most of the time. So
it's hard. It's not like an arcade game where you just jump in and sit in. You feel everything because you've got to lie quite flat in this car, and it's quite tricky. In fact, some people have come out always getting cramp in their feet trying
it does all the vibrations and the bumping. If you go over the gravel, it feels like you're going over the gravel. Combined with a VR headset, it really is a realistic experience.
It's pretty good.
You can think what it would be like for Jim Clark and Co. I suppose, you know, with the difference is that you're not risking your life doing it.
If you bump it, it's not an issue. But that's the thing. And you must have had some, well, obviously, but apart from the opening when you had a lot of special guests as well, but throughout the year, you must have met a few kind of very interesting people coming from the racing world.
People from, you know, back in the 60s, we had old mechanics of Jim Clark's and teammates and, you know, ex-girlfriends and so on come up right through to modern drivers. You know, we've had people from the current sort of, you know, Formula 3 scene and kind of stuff, the development up to Formula 1 and people from touring cars and Dario Franchitti, of course, has lent us a car for display. And, you know, we've had all the great names. You know, Jackie Stewart was there to open it, and, you know, McNish and all these kind of guys. So
it was a great day. I was there for the opening, and it was fantastic. I thought they really put on a great job. And Jackie Stewart, I mean, he talked for about half an hour outside. I mean, I thought he really gave his all to kind of talk about
Jim. He still has a great passion for, you know, that year. Obviously, his great friend that was Jim Clark. And I think Jackie Stewart's a lovely sort of line that runs through the whole story, because back when the trophy room first opened in 1969, Jackie Stewart was he didn't formally open it. I think it was the Jim Clark's parents and the moderator, the General Assembly of the Church of Scotland, actually opened the room initially.
Yeah, yeah.
But Jackie Stewart was the face of the there was a medal they produced, a medallion, to help raise money for it.
Yeah.
He was the face of that campaign, so that was 50 years ago.
Yeah.
25 years ago, the room was refurbished, and he came opened that. Yeah. And then here we are just last year.
Yeah.
He was opening the new museum. So very fittingly, I think, you know, Jackie's been the kind of thread that's run through all of the story, and Jackie Stewart really has been a great ambassador for the museum.
Was it about 1994 when it was redone?
Yeah, so it was the 25th anniversary of Jim Clark's death, so it would be 93. So it was redone 25 years, and we've obviously, for the 50th, had it rebuilt 10 times the size of it.
An incredible difference, really. I mean, because you had some amazing people turn up to the old one, in terms of you had Ayrton Senna
David Coulthard, I think, and all kinds of blokes. Ayrton Senna, actually, was an interesting story that he went to Loreto, the school at Jim Clark.
That's right.
And then came down to the museum.
Yeah.
You've got all these kind of figures from racing that it's become a kind of pilgrimage, I suppose, for people, you know, both fans and drivers to come up. A lot of people go to the grave, of course, at Chirnside. See the clock at Chirnside Cross.
Yeah.
And then come to the museum. So it's you get a lot of people who said, "Oh, we've been there, or just going to the churchyard at Chirnside." So there's that kind of poignant aspect for it to people as well. You know, it's kind of a rite of passage or a pilgrimage, if you like. So.
On the day of the opening, when we were there, there was it must have been in relation, because there was a chap there who was the spitting image of Jim Clark.
Yes.
And I don't know who it was, but we put it on our video that we did a few months back. And I mean, it was eerily kind of close. His voice was similar.
I forget. He was a distant relation. The funny thing was, it wasn't as close as you would have thought.
Yeah, but he's looked so similar.
It was a third cousin of a cousin or something. Maybe that's wrong, but it was, as you say, he was obviously the right kind of age. He had the right hair and the colour.
That was the whole
thing.
I thought if you had put one of those coats on him that you have been over the shop, my goodness me, folk would have been running up for an autograph.
If they were looking for a reenactor for a film or something, he'd be the man. I think he was the spitting image.
Because I'm not sure if he went in the simulator or not. But
I think we did get him in it.
And I mean, it was because we were kind of moving around as the cameras were coming round, and it was really, we were just like, there's something, or kind of incredibly close looking to Jim Clark with that chap. But it was a wonderful atmosphere, and of course the late Andrew Cowan was there as well.
Just a
few weeks before he passed away.
I met Andrew a few times during the redevelopment. He came when we were sort of 3-4 weeks from opening, and Dara Franchitti brought the cortina down, and Andrew to meet him.
Yeah.
And he was there just before we opened, and also you see the official opening.
It was
very sad, obviously, just only a couple of months later when we heard his passing. His memorial service is coming up in a couple of weeks in the
That's right, it's
Parish Church here in Duns.
The 1st of February.
We're closed in the winter normally, but that Saturday we're actually opening for the day at either side of the service. So if people in the area want to come and see the museum, because you know Andrew Cowan is part of that bigger story of Berwickshire Motorsport, just like Jim Clark was.
I interviewed him a year past October, and it was really interesting. I mean, because he was close to Jim Clark, and if I even shared his house, was it not? But I know that Douglas Niven the same, but they were all, because they were all in that same kind of group.
All contemporaries.
And all these kind of, and the farmers kind of racing groups, and it was, they knew each other really, really well. I interviewed Douglas Niven as well just a year ago, and that was because, of course, he's Jim Clark's cousin.
Yes,
we had some really interesting stories there. But so what do you think in terms of the future of the museum? I also, you'll be changing exhibits every year and things. Do you have any insight as to what might be coming next?
Yeah, I mean, the next few years is all about really trying to kind of, you know, sustain what we've built up in this first six months. I mean, we appreciate it's not going to be as busy day by day as it has been necessarily the first 6 months, but it's to keep the visitor numbers up, keep the interest up, and then develop new things, whether it's events, school visits. You know, we're keen to have as many Borders classes through as we can, you know, to learn. Not just about Jim Clark for the sake of Jim Clark, which is obviously a good enough reason, but to use Jim's story about, you know, his personal life, his kind of values and his modesty, about his, you know, being best in the world at what he was doing, about what life was like in Berkshire in the 50s on the farm. Yeah. You know, use all those kind of threads to teach the kids about history, geography, values, and to be a way to open up to their education opportunities. There's all those kind of things we look to do in the future.
Because, as you say, the Jim was the best in the world. He won two world championships in Formula One. But I don't think he's the kind of person that would have said, "Oh, I'm the best in the world."
No,
and
absolutely. That,
you know, quite the opposite.
He was you know, people call him the quiet champion.
And
I think the other thing we like to focus on is the fact that, you know, okay, people have won more Formula One World Championships than Jim Clark have, but you won't find anyone, I think, maybe Fangio, but other than him, who did it in so many categories of racing.
Yeah.
And that's the key that unlocks beyond the Formula One clientele. To say that, you know, here's a man who excelled in saloon car racing, endurance racing, not only in Formula One, but, you know, Formula Tasman, who won Indianapolis, you know, first non-American for a century.
And they've travelled all over the world all the time. I mean, it was such a busy diary. Now they have, I mean, they've got like 21 races in Formula One, but, but for a long time it was about 15 or 16. And after that was pretty much it. But when you think in those years, I mean, Jim Clark was travelling every weekend just about.
I had a chuckle a few weeks ago, you know? When there was some comment about, I think the number of Formula One races that you see is currently, just, it's gone over the 20 mark.
Yeah.
You know, it's too arduous for them all. And I'm thinking, fun to think that in 1965, Jim Clark had 10 months, January to October inclusive. And I think he had 4 weeks off in those 10 months. So you know that now that is arduous. You know, doing 40 weeks out of 44 every
year. They went to Australia, New Zealand, doing live championships every year, and then back to Europe, and then you know, and it would have taken a lot longer in those days to fly those kind of distances.
Absolutely, and in fact, in Europe, often it was even you know they were just going by road if there was two races or 2 weeks in a row. And what you've got to remember is that nowadays, you know, Lewis Hamilton, let's say he'll do the Formula One race and that's him for the weekend. You know, obviously, it's a big exercise, practice, qualifying, etc. But, you know, Jim Clark was sometimes racing two or three races in an afternoon. You know, he was doing the support race, which might have been, you know, the Formula 2, let's say. Then you'd have a break, get a bite to eat. He often had a steak and kidney pie, apparently, which is probably the dietitians nowadays would frown upon, but fuel himself up, going to the Formula One race. And then there was often a saloon car race to close the day. And so he'd on more than one occasion, did all three categories and won all three in a row. So, you know, he'd going from a Formula Two car to Formula One, then into a Lotus Cortina or a Ford Galaxy, whoever it would be,
and then winning
winning all three. Sometimes he'd do a race in Britain on the Saturday, fly to France on the Sunday. Did that several times. On one occasion, he was in Canada on the Saturday and flew, and this is kind of against the time zones, you know, and raced in London on the Monday. You know, so he kind of flew overnight, Saturday into Sunday, and then racing the Monday in London. So, yeah, he was doing 70, 80 plus races a year.
That's incredible.
Which is, and that's what sets him apart. Like, so you can look at a man who, from a position of having never raced until he was in his late teens, you know, he wasn't go-karting or involved in what we kind of think of the youth system now. He just had a natural talent, took to it, and from then excelled in all those, you know, even rallying. You know, he didn't never have the opportunity, of course, to win a rally championship because he couldn't devote all the weekends for it. But, you know, the British rally in 66 he was excelling in. And
He just could have done anything.
And obviously that's one of the things that he began with in the Borders was the rallying scene, and we have the rally in his name today, obviously. So, you know, people come in and say, oh, was he the greatest driver ever? And we can say, well, if you're talking about Formula One, we'd like to think he was, but we appreciate that there's other contenders.
He has to be right up there. He has to be right up in that
But I think in terms of drivers, in terms of all-round motorsport achievement, I struggle to, like I say, you can go back in time to the kind of Fangios and so on, but obviously I would say even he would surpass that. But certainly, you know, people since, I don't think anyone has excelled in those three or four different types. Well, no one since has won Formula One in Indianapolis and Seattle. And people have tried for 50 plus years.
Been trying to do it and so, all the rest of it. So it is.
But no one's ever, in fact, you know, it's actually rare for a Formula One driver even to win it, never mind to try and win Formula One as well.
It was only Matt Mansell who did the Formula One in 92. know, and now it's publicised and put out on YouTube.
And you see the cars are not environment. You know,
yeah.
It's wonderful in the museum now because you can get up to within a couple of feet of his British Touring Car Champion, winning car, his Formula One winning car, although it's 25, but there's just something about seeing the cars.
Even in that little marquee that they had, and they were sitting in there, and no, it was a bit like Goodwood. You know, you were kind of watching them as they got ready to come onto the track and off they went. And of course, Alan McNish drove one, Jackie Stewart drove one. The lower formulas, but they're amazing cars. And they were kind of doing their wonderful warm-up.
No, it's a kind of festival atmosphere. And I'm sure it'll happen sometime.
Yeah. Because we've got a couple of good pictures, because you had an up-to-date Lotus Formula One car at the time. I think it was a 2012 show car. It was that big black one that they had next to it.
Right.
And there were rumours, because I remember talking to a few folk there saying that because at that time, Grosjean and Raikkonen raced for Lotus at the time in Formula One. And there was a rumour that they had been seemingly, I think obviously it was pie in the sky, but Romain Grosjean was going to come along and drive, because we didn't know if that car was actually a show car or whether it was a real car. And I thought if it was a real car, there would have been a bit more, they may have had a few more people around it. But there were a lot of folk around it, and I don't know if there was a lot truck that came along to drop it off. But that time,
there also been a great supporter because of this whole heritage of Jim Clark. They've been a great supporter of the whole project, and you know, that's the thing, is that, you know, even when there may not be a Lotus name in Formula One, for example, you know, there hasn't been Unbroken for obviously a number of decades, but the heritage of it lives on. You know, whether there's a Lotus team or not, whether it's racing in different categories or not, and you know, that's all part of it, is because, you know, Jim Clark story is the Lotus story. He didn't race exclusively for Lotus. Even once he was a professional driver, you know, one of the interesting things is these little occasions when he raced for other teams, but overwhelmingly it was Lotus right to the end. And then, you know, that's the one of the great legacies of
and
his
iconic
story.
Colin Chapman, Jim Clark,
if you had to look at, you know, the great partnerships of racing history, that would be, I'm sure, up there as the contender for the very top one. You know, a man who's, you know, got this just innate natural talent, coupled with a guy who's able to, you know, break the mold when it comes to design. You know, the combination of the two is what made
the cutting edge technology for what they could do, wasn't it? And really kind of inspirational entrepreneurship and ability and engineering to kind of come up.
And people
with
say, you know, that, you know, the reason that Jim Clark won all the things in the Lotus was because the other drivers couldn't get the car around or something like it breaking, you know, but he was so natural in the car, even though they were so light
and
fragile.
And he was good to it, wasn't he? He was kind of light on the car.
Yeah, you know, let's talk about, you know, he would go through a gearbox and 4, 5, 6 times the number of laps. Another driver would, you know, he would go so many more races on...
even tyres and brakes and things.
I can never believe that, sometimes even reused tyres raced. I mean, imagine that nowadays. You know, never mind so many pit stops during
the
race, but
you
actually get some reuse. But hey, it was a different game in money terms. You know, it was, you know, it was a wealthy sport at the standards of the time, but it was nothing compared to today.
No, that's super. What would you say, to sum up for the museum? What would you say is the main attraction, and how? If you can speak to folk out there just now who might be listening or watching, and think what would be the main attraction for them coming?
Well, I can tell you the three favourite things. We have a visitor form. It's anonymous. People can just tick the boxes and drop it in the letter box as they go out. And the three things that people enjoy most from their visit are the cinema area. So we have a number of short films people can watch telling Jim Clark's story, what life was like, his kind of, you know, it's great career highlights and so on. So that is right up there. The trophy room is right up there. And like I said, it is just, when you walk into the space, it's such an impressive, actually some people quite moved by it. You know,
it's
atmosphere.
Yeah, it's emotive. They've got that kind
And the cars, you know, the great thing is obviously the old trophy room was just trophies. The new museum has all the different aspects, including that we've got two actual Jim Clark racing cars on show. And as I was saying to someone again, I don't know how many places there'll be in the world, certainly in Britain, where you can see the same man's Formula One and touring car winning cars, you know. And then you walk through and there's the Indianapolis trophy. And I mean, he never won Le Mans, but you know, he finished second and third. And you know, so you can just, within that, you know, the space of a tennis court, whatever the distance will be between those two parts of the museum. You've got, you know, four different categories of racing at the very elite level. But one of the great things that people say is, you know, it's the whole experience. So the museum really does take you around in a natural flow. It tells you who he was, what he achieved, what he was like, and you'll see what happened to him in terms of the tragic accident and his death. And how that's influenced safety since.
That German video they showed was it was really interesting. It was stirring, actually. It was quite a thing to watch.
It is, and it's quite, there's a kind of bittersweet element of, you know, that he wasn't killed, you know, in Formula One or in some really important race. It was, by the standards of the time, he's really important, but it was just a routine, one of them old Formula 2 race. You know, he was the greatest driver in the world, and something in the car broke, whatever it was, and you know, that was the end of it. And so it's about all those elements. What has been so fulfilling for me is that you get people who come who they've maybe heard the name and that's it. Or maybe, you know, that the dad's a motorsport fan, but the wife and the kids don't really know. And people who know little to nothing enjoy the experience as much as the aficionados.
And that's really because we've got
the layering of, you know, if you know nothing, you can come in, look at the pictures, read the big panels, look at some of the objects, have a go and interactive, see the film, whatever it might be. But if you're a Jim Clark fan, there's content there for, you know, you could be hours in the museum with all the touch screens and because it's all at your fingertips, really. Every race he raced is in that database, you know, everything you've got footage of is there somewhere.
That's really good.
Which is fantastic. And, you know, that way, keep people coming back to you. Like I say, you know, the temporary exhibitions will change every year. Last year it was kind of his two Formula One seasons photographs. It's called Champion of the World. This coming 2020 season, it's Clark on canvas.
So we're
having a display with the Guild of Motorsport Artists, and it'll be various types of artwork, you know, produced with Jim Clark as the subject. And so there'll always be new content on that side. The cars will change every few years. So we've got the cars are all on loan from other museums and owners and so on. So there'll always be something new to see if you come back each year. But even if not, you could spend so long looking at all the. If you want to pour over the touchscreens for hours, you can do so.
No, it's great. It's really super, and you never know who might turn up to come in and see it.
Absolutely,
well.
We had Steve Ryder was in one day, and someone from the Porsche series in Germany the next, Jackie Stewart's family came and visited. So you can. You never know who might be there as well.
I'm trying to remember the chap. Oh, he's quite big in Formula One. He does a lot. I don't know if he writes for Autosport, but I remember being in the Jim Clark room when he came along. What was his name? Is it Peter? Yeah, Peter Windsor.
Right.
I'm sure. And I think I've seen him again. And I noticed at the big opening, you had a lot of the major journalists who have quite regularly appear on Sky F1. They had turned up as well to kind of obviously.
Well, I think Peter Windsor's a great. I think Jim Clark's a great hero of his. And as you say, and we've had people from, I can't remember what the man's line of work was, but we had an industrialist from Japan who was sort of over in London or something and obviously wanted to come up and see the museum. We've had people from New Zealand, Australia, and all corners, really. In fact, I think, from my memory from the survey, I think not far off, maybe it wasn't 10%, but let's say 7 or 8% of visitors have actually been from from abroad, which is great. You know, I think that's over maybe 1,000 people or so who've been. In fact, we had one American fellow and his wife. They were doing their, you know, the European holiday.
So
they were having however many weeks it was, and so their visit to Britain was London to see Buckingham Palace and the Tower of London, Edinburgh for Edinburgh Castle. Loch Ness and the Jim Clark Motorsport Museum.
Well,
so I'm now saying that we're up there at Buckingham Palace, Edinburgh Castle, and Loch Ness for.
That's pretty good going, isn't it?
But I say, you know, fans will travel far distances to see stuff about their hero. And again, we've had some very emotional visitors. You know, there's been people who, even in some cases, kind of, you know, broken down and cried. And you know, that's not it's not a bad museum. It's because of the emotion of it for them. You know, he was their idol and their hero, and Jim Clark. You know, obviously, it's been 50 years. Gone now, but and that's kind of quite reassuring as well, you know, that for those people, as we say, it isn't Jim Clark land. You know, it's not been made in a kind of twee kind of fashion.
No, it's very respectful and decent.
It is. And you know, it's got an emotional connection for people because it's not just about, you know, he was a man who won lots of races. It's about what he was like as a person.
Yeah.
What his personality was like, what his values were. And a lot of it in contrast to what people are like today. You know, so much of celebrity culture nowadays is about excess and showing off and kind of arrogance.
Yeah, yeah.
And Emily Jim Clark was, you know, the anathema of all that. You know, he was quiet and retiring and didn't really like.
I've heard some of his interviews. And really just incredibly interesting. You listen to him for hours because, you know, he had obviously a huge insight from what he did for his living and just how nice he was, you know, how decent he was. And that's the kind of, picture came over Lena Massaway. And I always remember my father he knew Jim Clark. He was around at the time as a GP in Duns. But what was quite funny was that he was once driving up to Edinburgh and he had a normal Ford Cortina and he thought he was doing quite well because he used to drive fairly quickly around these borders, roads, doing night calls and whatever else. So he was kind of used to the roads. And he was past, Carfrey Mill, kind of going up towards Sutra. And he thought he was doing quite well. And all of a sudden, this car flew past him. And he said, my goodness me, that's Jim Clark. You know, so it was the name in his Lotus Cortina. So I think a lot of people in the borders still have those that they would have met.
They do,
there's
so many people remember him, because, you know, say through the agricultural industry and they still live in the area. And what I have to remind people is, of course, that, you know, in his autobiography, for example, he'll talk about, I collected a car at Luton and brought it up and I reached 120 miles an hour because there was no speed limit until the mid 60s. So you occasionally say someone who you can maybe see. And you're talking to them about his life in the area, and they might say, "Oh, I remember. Oh, he went at terrible speeds," and it was like, "Yeah, but of course everyone did."
because
you know, the roads are so much quieter.
And the things of the cars didn't have the brakes.
Not everyone had judgment of Jim Clark.
You need to be a good driver in those days.
But just to go back to what you're saying then about his interviews, is that one of the things that I've always taken from, you know, kind of listening to it all, is that he strikes you as a man who never took for granted what he had, you know. He always talked about it in the way of, you know, someone who was always trying to improve, but also it was, you know, it wasn't a kind of arrogance about how good I am, you know.
Would say anything like that.
I've really never seen any, you know, whether it's print, recorded, you know, TV, film, I mean, past any news, I've never seen that I can think of offhand. I've never seen anything with Jim Clark being interviewed which you would describe as being kind of brash or full of himself or kind of show-offy. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, he was champion of the world and he would get invited into TV shows and people would laud him and so on. But there was always a kind of humility to it.
Yeah, he never kind of, he would never come out saying, oh, yeah, I'm the best in the world.
Absolutely. And I think that also, you know, obviously that was part of what his values were, how he was brought up and so on, no doubt. Yeah. I think it was also kind of awareness of how fleeting success could be. And not for, you know, nowadays it can be fleeting because you might lose your form and not get your contract renewed. In those days, it was because, you know, they were facing death and injury. You know, and so there was never the kind of one-upmanship, I think, in the driving circles that there is maybe today, because you know, it was a matter of life and death, not just a matter of, you know, getting the next contract or winning the next some of the points. And that's, you know, there's always that sort of little edge to it, you know, that. Those guys that lined up every season, come the end of the season, a certain number of them would be dead. And, you know, we don't think of that nowadays. And the museum, to explain it to the younger generation, has to get that across to people that one of the legacies of Jim Clark has been the safety improvements that mean that now, you know, thank goodness, you go 10 years in front of one and there might be no fatality. He's known with, you know, a couple of injuries, you know, of any notable degree, whereas in Jim Clark's day, you would struggle to go a few months and someone not be killed at times.
So one year was it? It was one of the years in the 60s. It was like seven drivers were killed in the whole year.
One of the seasons, there's a stat about it, that the number of men that lined up for that season, it was maybe 65 or 66 or something. By the end of the decade, I think between a quarter or a third of them had died. And we have there's a big backseat photo in the legacy part of the museum, which is people at his funeral, standing at his funeral. And in the centre of the image, it's Graham Hill and Joe Bonney. And again, by 1977. Was both of them were 71, whenever it was, both of them were dead. So it was.
It was a It was like a great sport, really.
Yeah.
The way that they regarded life and death, but
10 till 4:30, except closed on Wednesdays and Sundays only from 1 o'clock. So any day of the week, remember.
Yeah.
And we love September, October. There'll be at some point various other things going on, events and so forth. Maybe later in the year, different car. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah.
But certainly a new exhibition and other events and things on the go. So.
Yeah.
And the more the merrier, really. What we've said is, you know, it's been built for people to come and visit. That's what museum's for. So the more people come, the happier everyone is. So.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. Well, thank you very much for coming.
Not at all. Thanks for having me.
I wish you all the best, and certainly for the museum. It's absolutely brilliant. I love it. I love it. Every time I go in there, I can't resist a simulator. I have to have a go. Even if I do get cramped by the end of it at my feet. But, but no, it's absolutely brilliant fun.
And that time coming down.
Exactly. Well, that's what we're working on. But no, it's absolutely fantastic. And for all the viewers and listeners here who have been watching us, listening to the Car, Sim and Race Driver Show with our special guest, Kenny McLean, it's been fantastic to have you. And remember our motto, drive fast and try not to crash.